On the show today, we have SRM's very own Neil Daugherty talking about mid-year trends financial institutions should be watching. We're talking, there's three of them, cryptocurrency, buy now, pay later, and regulatory developments. And so Neil is here to give us the latest on all three of them. Fascinating conversation. So I hope you check it out. Mike Lawson here with CU Broadcast. Welcome to our show. And on today's program, we have SRM's very own Neil Daugherty. Neil, how are you, sir? Good to see you.
I'm doing great, Mike. Thanks for having me today. Really looking forward to the conversation.
Yeah, me too. Yeah, I think this is going to be kind of a rapid fire kind of a conversation because we're talking about mid-year trends financial institutions need to watch. And you folks at SRM, you guys, I mean, actually, you guys have so much great information coming out of your company. A lot of great content, a lot of practical kind of like list type of stuff. And this one is no different. So
sure.
So I really enjoy getting your press releases or your information in my inbox, like, okay, what are they up to now? What are they gonna list for us this time? And so this time, again, it's mid-year trends financial institutions need to watch, creditings in this case. So we're just gonna dive right into it, Neil, if you want to. Let's go with number one, cryptocurrency. I think that's number one on everyone's list anyway.
Yeah, sure. Thanks, Mike. And I will say, while we're calling it mid-year trends, maybe it's a little bit more like later year. We're kind of stretching it a little bit. But point being is that these are all things that we think, you know, our credit union clients and our network in general will want to know and just kind of be really close to. So cryptocurrency is obviously something that's been, you know, in the conversation for months and months and months. I mean, I think the reality is that there's been some turbulence in the market, right? And for those who kind of saw the price correction of the actual coins themselves in June, they may be thinking about kind of the legitimacy of this piece. And there's conversation about that going on all the time, right? But our interest is really more important in terms of what's the interest of the credit union client and what's the infrastructure and those opportunities, right? One of the things that we've talked about, you may have heard, I think you spoke previously with our colleague, Larry Pross, as well as Patty and Keith Ash from our team, who do a lot of these types of conversations, both kind of for bigger audiences, as well as specific, whether they're board conversations or talking with specific credit unions. And one of the things we talk about a lot is that what we're really trying to do is help the credit unions take what was really figured as a threat and turn it into an opportunity, right? And figuring out a way to create an infrastructure that's going to basically provide what that membership wants. So, excuse me, what we're really trying to do is educate, right? Educate in the space, making sure that people understand what's happening. You know, we've seen a lot of credit unions launch buy, sell, hold capabilities, which is something we talk about in our trends release. And we're seeing partnerships with those various fintechs that are helping bring that to play, right? They're implementing those scenarios. And this is really kind of a digital frontier, you know, kind of moving on from traditional finance. And that education piece is critical, right?
Yeah.
Something we've really been focused on. We have our Crypto University Forum, which you may be aware of, which was actually recently named a finalist in NAFQ's Innovation Awards for this year.
Cool.
So we're looking forward to that. But
yeah,
I mean, it's really about just education and understanding, you know, where is the infrastructure and what is the demand, right, in the market. And in fact, we recently worked with a client who helped us kind of understand that, you know, they were looking at crypto, trying to plan it, trying to understand their digital assets environment. And it was interesting to see they ended up bumping up their project, right? It was something that they had kind of planned for maybe more midterm or longer term, but they saw it as kind of a critical mass situation, right? And they were glad that they, you know, had our attention early. I think one of their concerns was, you know, they're going to need someone to guide them through the process, but they don't want to wait in line when everybody's rushing into that. They wanted to kind of get ahead of that a little bit. So, you know, whether it's a consultant or a technology partner, you know, they were really making sure that they could get ahead of that game. And a lot of these credit unions are starting to get smart too in terms of looking at those outflows, right? Assessing what's happening there. And again, where is the opportunity to turn what could have been a threat into more of an opportunity?
Yeah. And I'm finding there is no shortage of desire or demand for cryptocurrency education. Cause I mean, you go to these conferences or there's webinars on, you know, online and stuff, and they are, you know, standing room only, you know, or virtual standing room only. So there's no shortage of people who want to get educated in this area. Cause it's to a lot of folks, as you've probably seen as well, it's such a mystery. It's still such this kind of there's this aura around it. Like, what's going on here? Should we dive in?
For sure. And it has its own language, right? And so, you know, we've seen that as well. I mean, our like I said, Larry Prust, who's our managing director of this practice area, Patty Welbels, who's our certified cryptocurrency expert from the Blockchain Council, they are, you know, they're getting in front of and presenting to rooms of 500, 1,000 people to try to help them, you know, kind of understand and effectively translate this language, right? And how can they apply that to their needs? But I think the real opportunity here is that we always see that credit unions are definitely first movers, right? They're generally on the cusp of trying to do the right thing for their members and trying to create an experience that is really, frankly, meaningful, right? So we look at it as just an overall mindset change. And we really think that credit unions are the ones that can be those kind of rational leaders in the space, right? And they can help to, you know, evolve with the needs, make sure they understand their base. And everybody's going to be a little bit different and their timing is going to be a little bit different potentially, but it's really just understanding, right? And again, we do a lot of board education throughout the year. We talk to a number of different entities, just trying to help them understand and stay, you know, connected with it. You know, it's just the reality is that there's so much stuff out there, right? There's so much information, but where's the knowledge, right? And so I do believe that my colleagues, our thought leaders in this space, do a really good job of kind of consolidating that, aggregating it to the point where it feels like knowledge, not just a bunch of information that you can't really sort through. So
I love that take. Okay, there's a bunch of information out there, but where's the knowledge? Yeah. Oh my gosh. Right. What a great way to filter it for sure.
And, you know, at the same time, our team could also talk to it, you know, to the nth degree and to the level of detail that some folks want. So it's very macro in some situations where we're just trying to help people understand and decode that language. Mm-hmm. And there's scenarios where we go a little bit further and we get into the micro elements of how do they turn that into a true roadmap, right? Where is the strategic elements of it? And, you know, how do we then help them get connected with technology vendors? And that's a big piece of it, too. One of the things that we see a lot with this space is that, you know, sometimes we want to get into things and we sort of rush into a solution. And one of the things that we're trying to do is be kind of a, you know, kind of third party mindset to help them look at all of the options that are available to them and not necessarily rush into one solution or another, as there's all kinds of things happening. But I mean, this is a day to day thing for us. We stay so close to the activity in this space. We're really looking at regulation. In fact, we just responded to the Treasury's request for public comments. They're looking at, you know, basically overview of ensuring responsible development of digital assets. And so, you know, that's something that we're very active in, is kind of having our take on that. But the thing we always come back to is that effectively we're in favor of innovation and competition. And this is the space that innovates, right? And this is where that innovation is happening. And on top of that too, one of the things that we keep seeing and that we think is important for kind of the overall, our country, the global economy, is that it also provides opportunities for individuals who previously kind of been marginalized or squeezed out of traditional banking. So there's all these different elements of it that come together. And again, you know, we continue to educate more than anything.
Yeah. Yeah. And I see all of this activity and this education, such a great sign for the industry, because people are truly interested in it, because they know this is where the consumers are going and this is where their members are going. So yeah, so this is really, really good stuff. I want to get to another one that you guys have listed here that might be just, it might be 1A, the crypto might be 1A, this might be 1B, buy now, pay later. Right. So what's the latest going on there?
Well, and again, I mean, it comes down to innovation, right? And you might recall we issued a report on this topic not that long ago. But I mean, the reality is this is not a new premise, right? It's kind of a modern day layaway program. Yeah. It's paid in installments. It's typically a pay in four type model, except you receive your goods or, you know, whatever it is that you're purchasing without that delay. And it's very simple to initiate. So, you know, it's pretty wild. Like, you're seeing that merchants are paying fees to the fintechs to do this kind of thing. And sometimes they're upwards of like 6%, but they're keeping the sales rolling in. And that's a good bit higher than what you would consider like a traditional credit card transaction fee. So there's definitely an interest, there's activity, there's data saying that people are, you know, using this as an option, right? You've heard of these top names in the market, the Affirms, the Klarnas, the Afterpays. You know, these are essentially kind of a, what people, I think what the consumer looks at it as is a step in the checkout process, right? And not much more than that, but, you know, as they get into relationships with those. So let's just say there's a scenario where somebody used Affirm for three larger ticket purchases. Then Affirm obviously has their information. They're going to, you know, look out and kind of reach out to those folks when they have some other product on the market that could potentially compete with what a credit union or, you know, a community bank could offer. So there's a scenario here where obviously there needs to be some regulation of these particular companies as well. And we're seeing, I think, more of that coming. But just to kind of give you a, sort of an overview on the research that we've done, we see kind of three top reasons for why people are using this, right? One is it's easier to make payments. Two is that there's a ton more flexibility. And then the third one, which probably I was, you know, I would have expected to be the first one, is that generally there are no or very low interest rates to use these services. So it's no surprise that people are using these.
What's your take though on like Klarna's, their valuation has just taken a nosedive. So what's your take on that? What's going on? I don't know if you can answer that question. I apologize for coming out of left field on this one, but I've been like, whoa, what happened there? So do you have any, what's your take on that?
Well, and that may be just kind of an unfortunate scenario where they're also part of a larger kind of, you know, check down on the tech industry in general, as we've seen some of that fallout from the valuation scenario. I don't know that it's necessarily associated with the very specific use case that they offer, other than there's competition, right? And, you know, there's some kind of later players that have come into the game that have been able to, you know, whether it's through the experience or through other kind of tech and data that they offer, they can compete, right? Mm-hmm. But I think that there's also a scenario here where, you know, there's the writing is probably on the wall for some of these entities that there's going to be a little bit more intervention, a little bit more regulation, a little bit more check and balance around what they've been doing, right? And obviously kind of, you know, it's something that we've been following as well. But, you know, what we really do is we're consulting our clients that this is something worth considering as part of a holistic credit strategy, right? Mm-hmm. We're not saying you have to do this,
right.
You know, as a credit union of a certain size or a certain exposure, but, you know, evaluate the pros and cons of onboarding it, right? We saw that payments.com had done some research and we saw that 70% of consumers who were part of that survey said that they would be interested in using a buy now, pay later service if it was offered by their trusted institution, right? And this is something that we see over and over again. We see it with cryptocurrency as well, you know, there's a real understanding that if you give me this, because this is something that I know is out there, I might choose you over them, right? Yeah. And that's an opportunity.
Yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head there. Your trusted financial institution, this stuff seems to be a lot safer, I guess, however you want to define that term in this area, but it seems like it's a lot more trusted coming from that institution that you've been dealing with for so many years. So
And I think there's also a level of just knowing that your information, the other pieces of your financial life could be integrated with that, right? Completely. And that it won't be a ton of friction. But again, I mean, the buy now, pay later trend and the uptick of usage is really around the idea that there's just almost no inconvenience to it. And that can be a negative sometimes too, because we obviously have to be wary of, you know, debt and the fact that inflation has been a challenge, right? So we did see some movements in the buy now, pay later space where people were using, you know, buy now, pay later for what were really more essential goods. And that can be, you know, very concerning as well. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's just one of those things where we do see it as, you know, part of the whole, right? But one of the interesting things that we've also seen recently is like there was this understanding, right, that this was for a niche space. It was either younger, kind of more digitally savvy buyers, you know, younger people who buy online exclusively, who even buy through social media, those with less disposable income, but still wary of credit card debt, cash flow challenges, you know, recent inflation. But the reality is that now we're seeing that more mass affluent customers are using this technology too.
Oh, so are they? Okay.
There was some recent data that came out that was saying like for big ticket items, electronics, luxury goods, they were saying that anyone who was, of the people that they surveyed, 71% of people who had earned over 100,000 annually admitted to increasing their transactions through buy now, pay later over the last 12 months, right? So that's not insignificant, right? There used to be, again, this concept or this idea that this was only for a very niche group. And there was also some data, and I forgive me because I don't have the exact numbers right off the top of my head, but showing that seniors and more of the kind of the baby boomer generation were also starting to use this at a more significant clip over the last 12 months. So again, it's one of those things where I think as it becomes kind of part of the norm, as people talk to other people about how they make purchases, you know, certainly in a situation where, you know, younger generations may impact or influence older generations or vice versa, you start to see some of that. So that's really kind of what we're tracking as it relates to buy now, pay later.
Yeah, super interesting. And it's going to be even more interesting to see how it fares over the holiday season as it's more well, it's going to be more well entrenched as a payment mechanism as it was last year, where last year it was kind of new to a lot of people. So it'll be interesting to see what happens this holiday season. So let's get to the third one here, regulatory development, something again, top of mind for everybody. So what are you guys seeing here?
Sure. And I kind of alluded to it already, but I think what we expect is the two topics we've already talked about today are just going to have more scrutiny upon them, right? This year and into 2023. I mean, what we've seen is that federal agencies have been very busy issuing their request for comment scenarios, right? Similar to the one I mentioned with the Treasury Department on digital assets. There's a lot of that activity happening. And as you're probably aware, a lot of that stems from the president's executive order earlier this year to federal agencies to sort of analyze the use of digital assets, which I think that started back in March, if I'm not mistaken. And that's promising, right? In the sense of, while it's looking to protect consumers, investors, businesses, it's also speaking to an interest in driving American leadership and competitiveness, right? I think there's always been a little bit of a awareness or a belief that we're a little bit behind other global leaders in the digital asset space. Yeah. So the tenor of it was encouraging, but certainly there's a bigger picture in terms of making sure that the right rules, regulation, ultimately legislation are in place to, you know, protect consumers, protect businesses, to protect investors. And again, a lot of that will ultimately go back to the speculation of the coins themselves. That's not something that SRM, you know, is really concerned with. What we're concerned with is that we really feel like there's a point of no return where this infrastructure is there. And now it's about getting it right and putting ourselves on the right track to, you know, use that in a common and ultimately, you know, a meaningful way for, you know, the members, the consumers that are out there. But otherwise, you know, what we're also keeping eyes on right now is the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, right? They're obviously consumed in terms of protecting, you know, the general public from data attacks, from fraudulent scenarios and events. But they've already opened up inquiries into the those buy now, pay later companies that we talked about a little bit. And you even asked the question about their valuation challenge. I think some of it comes from, you know, the potential challenges of regulation, but it's fair to expect that there'll be more, right? Yeah. In the not too distant future for those types of fintechs, which frankly is good news for credit unions, right? Who are taking potentially a wait and see approach and want to really understand, you know, what does the competition look like if they get into this game? And the CFPB has also been highly active, you know, reviewing overdraft and non-sufficient funds, fees in general. I'm sure you've had some conversations around that recently with other guests, and it's obviously something that's happening. And Rohit Chopra, who is the leader of that, of the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, is also looking at, you know, credit card issuers, right? And potentially talking about revisiting the CARD Act and things of that nature. So we think that those are all scenarios that could potentially continue to gain traction, momentum, and there's some change coming in 2022, probably more likely in early 2023 as well. So those are some bigger picture stuff there.
And also kind of getting back to the regulations with cryptocurrency and buy now, pay later, I've actually heard that's a very positive thing because it validates or legitimizes that type of business or those types of payments. So people are actually like, bring it on, you know, because it just makes it that much more viable, right?
Absolutely. And it also helps an institution make a more informed decision, right? Completely. You know, and that's the conversation we have a lot of times is there's a lot of folks that we've talked to, and Larry would talk about this a good bit, where they really want to make a move, but there's also that uncertainty and they're, you know, they want to make sure that they have a level of guidance that feels right at the right time. So, you know, it's good to get educated. It's good to be prepared. It's good to have a, you know, kind of a blueprint for your plan, but also we understand there are scenarios where folks still want to have a little bit more insight in terms of the regulation itself and what to expect. So, I mean, that's kind of where we are right now and what we're tracking.
Good deal. And so looking at all three of these kind of lumped together, can you give us kind of a significance of these trends for credit unions today? What's the significance of all these three? And maybe there's a few other outliers as well that credit unions should be known about, and what's the significance or the importance of them?
Yeah, I think that's a great question. And for us, again, it all comes down to innovation and competition, right? All of these trends are basically kind of reimagined modern mobile ways of moving and managing money, right? So, you know, we think that that is something that has reached sort of a critical mass as well, and something that we continue to see as an important infrastructure scenario. Again, it's kind of, you know, what happens in the background, but also what is the experience that a member might want. So, and if you think about it too, knowing that credit unions are mission-based organizations and they're serving the best interests of their members, tracking these trends, staying educated, it's going to be a huge net positive. Like regardless of what moves they make or what their ultimate roadmap is, just knowing that they are in a position to make a really informed decision or, you know, add something to their strategy and their tactical planning, we think that's huge in terms of kind of that overall significance of these trends. And that's why we spend so much time, whether issuing reports or whether we're doing the crypto university, whatever it might be, to bring people into the fold.
Right. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Well, I know you asked a question about outliers. And the only other things that we're really looking at is, you know, stuff like, obviously, member experience is everything, right? So any kind of enhancements or investments in that area is always going to be huge. I mean, we're definitely talking to folks who are really reassessing their performance in the overall experience area, and something that we're constantly hearing. And then we're also going to be doing some first party research around artificial intelligence, specifically kind of, will there be a reinvestment in that in 2023? Is that was something that kind of got off track a little bit with the pandemic. But we do think that could be a critical investment for credit unions, especially when it comes to, you know, internal functions, but also some external things as well. So, you know, in terms of outliers beyond what we've already talked about, those are definitely two things that we're going to be tracking.
Okay.
I'm sorry, you had another question, Mike?
No, I was going to say that doesn't all of this give, and you may agree or disagree, but doesn't it give the member that much trust, or maybe increases their loyalty if your credit union is involved in these things? Don't you think if they're going to kind of dabble into, or dabble, that's pretty much the wrong word, but if they're going to invest in this or educate themselves in these areas, I mean, to me as a member, if I saw my credit union doing this type of stuff, and they are, I would go, okay, my credit union gets it. They're looking for the future. They're looking toward the future here. So I would think that would just up the loyalty quotient.
Yeah. And I would tend to agree. I mean, I think maybe it depends, you know, from, you know, individual to individual, how much you value the idea of innovation. But I think, you know, if you polled, you know, 7 out of 10 people in, you know, today's world and economy, innovation is table stakes, right? So, you know, if you know that your credit union, while obviously giving you competitive everything, right. From, you know, rates to any other things that you need them for, and that real personal experience and relationship. And then on top of that, they're still part of the innovation landscape. And to me, I mean, it absolutely drives trust, loyalty, retention, all those things that, you know, really credit unions were always made to be. So I absolutely agree. And I think that there's really a lot of value in the conversations that we have with, whether it's clients or just a general network of folks that we know who are really taking these things seriously and trying to, you know, kind of look at, and again, it comes down to the idea for them of future-proofing too, and really being prepared for what's coming next. So, I mean, it's all really coming together in terms of a willingness. We see so much more of a willingness for these conversations to occur and a lot of interest. And it's just, it's great. Honestly, we've been very fortunate. This is our 30th anniversary this summer. And we're really having such an interesting summer because we're looking back and reflecting on our growth and kind of our, you know, humble beginnings. But we also see that there's just so much more that we can do for clients in this space. So it's really an interesting time.
Yeah, it's definitely, this road, this innovation road we're on is definitely a never ending journey. It's always going to be just perpetual, but it's really exciting at the same time. Like you said, it's really cool. The opportunities that are out there and ones that we don't even know about yet. So it's really exciting to see for sure. All righty, Neil. Well, I know you have a job to do, but I really enjoyed this conversation. This is fascinating stuff here. Anything else to add to wrap up? Any final thoughts here on this stuff?
No, I think I would just encourage folks to check out our crypto university if they want to learn a little bit more and just kind of stay connected with us. We'll have some additional reports coming out before the end of the year, and just looking forward to talking. So thanks again, Mike. Really appreciate you having me on. I think this was a great conversation.
My pleasure, sir. My pleasure. I look forward to seeing the new information coming out of SRM as well. You guys do such a good job. So we always appreciate your time. So well done, Neil, and I look forward to the next conversation.
Awesome. Thank you, Mike. Appreciate it.